So let's all close our eyes and repeat after me, thinking of each word as you say it. Lord of the universe.
Lord of the universe.
O creator, protector, and destroyer of the worlds.
O creator, protector, and destroyer of the worlds.
I come in all humility to thy holy feet.
I come in all humility to thy holy feet.
And surrender myself entirely to thee.
And surrender myself entirely to thee.
Deign to bless me ever with thy remembrance.
Deign to bless me ever with thy remembrance.
O merciful divine master.
O merciful divine master.
Give me strength, purity, and peace.
Give me strength, purity, and peace.
Thou art seated in the hearts of all.
Thou art seated in the hearts of all.
Thou art all purity.
Thou art all purity.
All goodness and all love.
All goodness and all love.
Thou art a veritable ocean of peace and bliss.
Thou art a veritable ocean of peace and bliss.
Thou art the lover of thy devotees.
Thou art the lover of thy devotees.
Refuge of the helpless.
Refuge of the helpless.
Redeemer and savior of those who resign themselves to thee.
Redeemer and savior of those who resign themselves to thee.
Make me dedicate my life to thee.
Make me dedicate my life to thee.
And to thy service.
And to thy service.
By thy grace.
By thy grace.
May peace and joy always dwell in my heart.
May peace and joy always dwell in my heart.
Thou art mother, master, friend, and all to me.
Thou art mother, master, friend, and all to me.
Accept me as thy child and servant.
Accept me as thy child and servant.
Grant me power to love thee with all my heart.
Grant me power to love thee with all my heart.
Let whatever I do be a fitting offering at thy holy feet.
Let whatever I do be a fitting offering at thy holy feet.
Make me pure in thought, word, and deed.
Make me pure in thought, word, and deed.
I lay my mind at thy feet.
I lay my mind at thy feet.
Fill it always with thy remembrance.
Fill it always with thy remembrance.
Let thy glorious light illumine my heart.
Let thy glorious light illumine my heart.
O sustainer of the worlds.
O sustainer of the worlds.
O kind and compassionate Lord.
O kind and compassionate Lord.
God of gods.
God of gods.
Give me the divine vision.
Give me the divine vision.
So that I may behold thee in all as all.
So that I may behold thee in all as all.
Make me ever feel thy constant fellowship.
Make me ever feel thy constant fellowship.
Make my life be guided and controlled by thee.
Make my life be guided and controlled by thee.
Thy presence be ever with me.
Thy presence be ever with me.
In me and everywhere around me.
In me and everywhere around me.
I beg of thee.
I beg of thee.
I prostrate before thee.
I prostrate before thee.
Hearken to this heartfelt prayer of mine.
Hearken to this heartfelt prayer of mine.
And make me thine.
And make me thine.
And thine only.
And thine only.
Forever and ever.
Forever and ever.
Amen. Amen. Let us meditate. And I would like to ask all of you to hold young John Dittman in your consciousness. Pray very hard for him. He needs our help very badly. I chose a few articles from Swami Ramdas. I thought I'd read them from time to time for you. The first one is The Secret of Your Life. When you chant the Beloved's name, your mind puts... Would you turn that light on over there, please? When you chant the Beloved's name, your mind gets enchanted by its sweet music and will take up the refrain. The mind is now inebriated with a strange and rare joy. Whenever it wanders, by the repeated infusion of this joy, it becomes immediately steady and placid. It is the waves of lower desires arising in it that causes this disturbance. When the mind is thus perfectly still through the power of the name, you attain to a state of self-awareness or witness consciousness. In a subtle way, you are made to transcend the relative nature of your life, with which you had identified yourself through ignorance, and come to realize that you are one with a vast, illimitable, and eternal truth or life. At first, there is a struggle for achieving the awareness, but by constant practice, you are fixed in this supreme consciousness and live and act always in a beatific state. Now the light of the inner witness floods every part of your emotional, vital, and physical being, and a marvelous transformation takes place in you. Life is divinized, not only in its inner aspect, but also in all its outer expressions. Man's fall from the height of his spiritual glory is due to his being involved in the external, changing, and unstable life. Detachment, or standing apart from it, is the first thing necessary to be freed from the illusions sprung from it. The practice of keeping watch over the mind is the most pleasant one. This can be made easily possible when the mind is tuned to the melody of the divine name. It is then not merely a negative inner detachment, but a positive experience of supreme bliss and peace. All the latent powers of the divine are at this stage revealed, and you become an all-round manifestation of the divine. You realize that the witness and the witnessed are one. You and God are one. The screen that separated you from him has dissolved. And you look upon all things with an eye of unity, because you behold everywhere the forms of your one eternal beloved. This sublime good, this sublime goal, is reached by first stilling the mind, which is done by chanting the name. Your ego disappears. Your hankering for the objects of desire ceases. Your sense of bondage is removed, and you swim in an infinite ocean of joy and peace, having realized utter freedom. So, remember God, meditate on him, surrender your life to him, and achieve the ultimate of your life, namely the secret of your life, God. Love is not a virtue. Love is a necessity, more so than bread and water, more so than light and air. Let no one pride himself on loving, but rather breathe in love and breathe it out, just as unconsciously and freely as you breathe in the air and breathe it out. For love needs no one to exalt it. Love will exalt the heart that finds it worthy of itself. Do you mind turning that light on back there, please? Homer, what does the word cloning mean to you?
What does the word mean?
Cloning.
Well, Webster defines cloning as, so I don't really know. Cloning is a technique of taking a cell or the genetic code from an individual and drawing another complete individual from that genetic combination.
Are you speaking of an individual as a human being?
I'm speaking of an individual, whatever the genetic code came.
Does a clone have a soul, Wilmer?
I would say yes, a clone would have a soul, because a clone is not a robot. It may have been something that was created, not created, but it is a being that the normal process of reproduction of Earth did not stand for, wasn't about in that way. But I would think that a clone would have a soul, because after all, a clone is produced as a baby, and it grows up and it has its own particular experiences, its own particular environment that it grows up in. It's not going to be, in terms of personality and inner being, the exact replication of the person from whom the original cell was taken.
It's not going to be exact?
It might be exact or close to it in physical body, but that's it.
That's it. Does it have a mind of its own?
Definitely.
It does.
Now, this is all hypothetical. Well, this is all hypothetical. No human being has ever been
to. Oh, you're not speaking of a being now.
No, you just said a being. No being above a frog has been produced.
Is a frog a being?
Yes.
It is.
Right, but it's a low level of evolution.
I see. It wouldn't be a being that could say, I am that I am. You don't remember? Bill, what do you think about that? The reason I'm asking this question, somebody asked me this question. I want to see how sharp all of you are and compare whether or not I was sharp.
Well, the thing that I think of is that, let's say, hypothetically, that a human being was cloned. That individual would still be a temple not made with hands. Because even though, perhaps under laboratory conditions, the situation was made so that it could be cloned, it's still that inherent power and essence of God that is the power in the original cell, and that provides the power for the cells to multiply and expand and grow into them. So it's still a holy temple.
Would you say that a clone would have normal consciousness the same as anyone else?
If a clone is indeed an exact replica, so to speak, of a human being from the taken, yes.
Well, it is in material, the material out of which it's made. Does it have feeling? Would you think?
I would think so.
You would think so. In other words, it would be human, just like anyone else. The only sameness would be the appearance of the body itself.
I tend to agree with Wilmer that the that individual would have its own experiences, its own environmental type of input that would make that individual different emotionally, spiritually, and mentally, even though it might be the same physically.
It's an interesting thing to conjecture about, isn't it? Anyone else have any ideas on the subject? Yes?
I would say that if a clone was actually able to attract a soul, then that would be possible. But I would really question whether they would attract a soul to begin with, not to begin with. On that point, in terms of the physical aspect of it, perhaps an alien, like an ideal environment or as a biological being, you know, of some sort, you know, from like a one-cell amoeba, a frog or whatever, but even on that, I don't know.
Well, would the clone, though, really attract a soul if it was a product made by a soul already existing in another body?
Well, this is what I would question, because just because you take a skin graft, which is my understanding of how they do this anyway, and then they are able to bring it together through some process genetically with another cell from another being, then the two of these coming together create some kind of being on that level.
Well, of course, they're doing eye transplants, they're doing heart transplants, all that sort of thing. Don't you think it's possible to also create a brain in a clone?
Well, that's because of the complexity of the brain, I really would question that, because, I mean, you know,
but how's it going to move?
Well,
it's an exact duplicate of a human being that's able to live and speak and act in the world.
Well,
now, what does it have as the basis for doing that if it doesn't have a brain?
Well, if it does have that, I mean, but the thing is that it's my understanding of it in terms of what they've actually been able to produce. I mean, so they can make a heart, you know, if they can make a heart. You know, this is what I'm questioning, whether they can. But if you say that they can, then I'll go with that.
I'm not saying anything about that.
Well, I really don't feel that they've been able to do that at all. I think that they
can duplicate a frog, though.
Well,
that's just been established.
That's what they say as far as being able to produce that. But in terms of the organisms and the complexity of the human mind and the whole anatomy of a human being, I'm really not sold on it at all. I really find that really pretty difficult.
Why? They've made test tube babies.
Well, yeah, so I've heard them make that also, but I think
that's a scientific fact.
Yeah, but cloning is a different process. I really don't think that scientifically they've got that way yet, and whether they will or not.
What is the process of cloning?
In my estimation, or at least this is what I've heard, where they've taken like a small cell of one body and a cell of another one and brought them together, you know, just as you would plant the seeds in a female and from a male also, and unite them into a being, and out of that would bring life.
Mm-hmm.
And genetically, I don't know, you know, I'm really not that.
If they can do it on a test tube basis, why not that way? Besides, all things are possible.
Well, probably, I don't know, I really don't. I just don't feel within myself that they've done it.
Well, they haven't done that yet, as far as human beings are concerned,
yeah.
But they're on the way to it.
Yeah.
Wilmer, you got some more to say about that?
Well, the question is, it's totally hypothetical anyway, because most scientists say that the technology isn't even developed far enough to actually produce them home. They don't even know what they would have to get in. That's way, way down the road. The question is, if a being is produced by taking a chromosome and somehow drawing a human being body, and it functions in the world like a regular human being, it has experiences, it has a life history, tendencies, emotions, insights, so on and so forth, it would seem that it wouldn't be a robot.
That's true.
And if it has a life in it, and it is being powered by the infinite, by God, it would seem that it would have a soul being. Not a robot. Not plugged into an electric current, or it doesn't have an iCAD batteries or anything like that.
Well, they developed the body. Who put the life in it?
God would have to put the life in it.
He would still have to do that.
Where do you even start? Because nobody has created that. They're starting with God, and they're going to God. No one has created life itself. They can't do that.
Mary Lou?
I would think that there would be a traffic accident, because there's so many people that are attached, that don't want to leave, that hover over and find that was an easy way, and they have another body. And the type of soul, it makes me wonder what type of souls would bring you.
What this world is coming to, huh?
Yeah.
Yes, Jerry?
I mean, God being present in every atom of space, God would be present there, but that's what I would be wondering about in what capacity. I mean, like a soul, you know, or on that level.
Mm-hmm. Yeah?
The question that comes into my mind, well, how much conscious volition is there when it's time to come back into the body?
Consciously. Well, when you have done your stint in the astral world, then you are told that it's time for you to be reborn. And usually you have an usher that takes you to the brink of the world and says, go there. And this choice is a combination of your karmic past, your future destiny, and your choice as an individual soul, which you seem to know at that time, in order to satisfy both of these things. In other words, it is said that we choose our fathers and our mothers. And that brings forth another interesting question, because these people who do not believe in reincarnation, and they believe only in the Bible, and we know what the divorce rate is today. And if you're going to meet your husband, and some religions preach that your whole family will be together in heaven, and you will know each other after you leave the body and all, I wonder what they're going to do with all of the divorced men and women up there. Which one are you going to choose? That's an interesting question, don't you think?
Maybe each one would have a favorite.
There you go. I beg your pardon?
And Mormons wouldn't have much of a problem.
Well, that's the religion I'm speaking in.
Well, they can believe me.
Yes. Well, but if you're going to choose your wife, singular, what are they going to do with all the rest that they've been married to?
In the Bible, Christ was addressed, it had the same question addressed to me.
Who did?
Christ.
Yes.
And he said he didn't bother to try to figure it out. He just said, well, in heaven there is no marriage. I wanted to be married to
In other words, do you think that it's different in heaven than it is on earth?
I think the heaven he was talking about was a much different interpretation than they had the economy.
As you see in the Lord's Prayer, it says, thy will be done in earth as it is in heaven.
Well, we haven't quite gotten it on earth yet.
These are all very interesting questions. Have anyone else have anything they'd like to talk about?
Well, I was going back to the cloning idea, and I was thinking that a soul that would accept a clone body, he would have a very unique kind of pattern. And if it wasn't my will that he experienced life in a clone body, it just wasn't meant to be, it wouldn't happen.
But you see, in the world of duality, there seems to be two wills, even though in actuality there's only one. So then you have to ask the question, was it God's will, or was it the will of the individual soul? For instance, there are many of these disembodied souls that are constantly hovering around, trying to find somebody who is weak or interested in spiritualism and open themselves so that they can take possession and work through that one. I've told you the story of the clairvoyant that I went to once, the spiritualist, thinking that I was only going to meet her, and found out I had an appointment set up for me, and so I took the appointment, and it turned out to be very, very interesting. So here was this little, for those of you who haven't heard the story, here was this little wisp of a woman, and we were talking, and I was asking her questions about how long she had been permitting this entity to use her body, and she said for 40 years. Imagine letting somebody use your mind, control your whole being for 40 years. And she wasn't really, she was very nondescript. She really wasn't there very much anymore. And so I asked her where this spirit had gotten her information. It was a woman, not a little Indian guide this time. And she said, she didn't know exactly. I said, is she God realized? Did she study under any master? Well, she went on a sabbatical, she said, for a year in order to study. And anyway, I was asking too many questions, and she said, she's getting very impatient to come through and speak to you. And all of a sudden, I heard this voice come through. Hello, how are you? My name is Bright Eyes. And I thought, oh, great. I said, who gave you your name? And she said, well, when I was a little girl, she said, I had big, bright, beautiful eyes, and one of the friends of our family nicknamed me Bright Eyes. I said, what's your real name? She said, I won't tell you. I don't know why it had to be such a secret. But anyway, she went on, and she said, we were very excited when we heard that you were coming. You come with a tremendous light, she said, and all of us up here were really thrilled that you were coming here. And she went on to tell me a few things, and pretty soon she said, I'm sorry, I can't read for you. I said, why not? She said, your light is too bright. She said, you must teach me. So I said to her, well, you really mean that? Yes, she said. I said, well, I'll tell you this, that what you're doing is very, very wrong. I said, you are keeping yourself earthbound. I like to help people. I said, is this God's will or yours? It's my will, she said. I like to help people. I said, well, why do you not go on in your evolution instead of staying here and using this woman's body as you have for 40 years? I said, do you not realize that you're building up a tremendous karmic pattern in using someone else like this? I said, you've taken this woman's mind, her life, her body, and have used it. And I said, this is totally wrong of you. I said, further than that, people come to you, and I said, whatever you tell them, they believe. And whether or not this was in their destiny, because you have told them that, then they believe that, and because the subconscious mind takes in and puts into practice whatever is fed into it, then you tell them they're going to get a divorce, they're going to get sick, they're going to die, or they're going to marry somebody or do this and that, immediately the mind goes to work and brings it into effect, and you are responsible for the karmic pattern of every life that comes before you. Well, she didn't like that very well, and I said, I would suggest that you stop it. She said, I'm not going to do that. I don't want to. And I said, well, if you don't want to, I said, then I will teach you the truth. And I said, instead of telling fortunes to people, so-called, I said, teach them the truth. And I told her the truth of the Christ. And so when I got all through, she said, we are going on a sabbatical for 3 months, but we will see you anytime you care to come. And she said, you'll be going to India in a year, and we will go with you. And I thought, lovely day. So I said, well, whatever God wills, you know. That was all I could say. And then all of a sudden she said, we feel such great love for you that we'd like to hug you. And I said, well, I also feel great love for you, but let us do it mentally, shall we? Anyway, that was a very interesting thing. And I thought afterwards, you know, Lord, you've taken me into about every phase of human existence now, but I never thought I'd be teaching a disembodied soul. It's really something, the things that you get into. And you wonder about these people. Someone said to me today that actually that there are people in human bodies that have not been born of a human mother and father, that they've been materialized or manifested by some of the forces, not all of them good in this world. And so that there are these so-called people walking around these forms that are spreading all these things amongst the people of the earth. And if you wanted to think about life in that manner, you could slightly lose your mind, you know, and you wonder, with every person you see, who dat? We live in a fascinating world. Well, I've met a couple of them. I wrestled with one night, and it wasn't a very pleasant experience, and I got burned in the process. Anyway, it was really something. I have some very interesting experiences. You remember that, Steve? Yeah. Steve is up here from California, and one evening when I was down there staying up at Idlewild, Steve was invited out by a young lady to go to what he thought was a social gathering. It turned out to be a fundamentalist church. So they were talking about all of the healing powers that they had been able to manifest in their group, and so he thought he'd tell a few that Mother had done too. Well, the minute he mentioned my name, I was anathema. I couldn't do that at all. Anything that I had done was strictly of Satan, but what they had done was strictly of God. So they pitied him, and so they had a prayer meeting against me right then, and they told him that they were all going to pray, and in two or three days, my power would leave me totally, and he would become one of them. And he came home scared spitless for what he thought he had done to me and confessed his sin of having gone to this meeting, and it wasn't any sin at all. Well, it seems about 2 or 3 days later, just the time that I should have lost all my powers, one of the women from Los Angeles was up here, Helen McComas. She came up, and I was talking to her, and God was just coming through with all the power in this being. And I looked at Steve when he came in, and I said, I don't think they made it. And he never did join them then. So it just just goes to show you, see, it's very, very interesting, the things that I have come at me. I suppose I'm not alone in this. Many other people who are not according to the orthodox or the usual way of doing things have much of the same thing to contend with. But nevertheless, you get a liberal education, and for every bit of it, you grow, because you have to meet it, you have to combat it. You either ignore it, or you give love in return, or you answer it, or you get into a battle and fight, and the battle usually doesn't get you any place because the minds are absolutely closed and they refuse to open them, they refuse to listen to reason whatsoever. But as I've been talking about lately, in most everything that the fundamentalists particularly are teaching and talking about and believing, they are truly not Christians, but rather they're Paulists. They're followers of the doctrine of Paul, and that doctrine is very much divorced from that of Jesus the Christ. And it was Paul himself who said that Christ was the only begotten Son of God. You will find no place in the Gospels where Jesus himself said that he was the only one. He said that whoever it was asked him, yes, it was true that he was the Christ. But he said, all of these works that I do, ye may do also, and even greater works than these that I do, ye may do. And also he mentions about masters, devotee can become greater than the master, but if he does what he should do, words to this effect, he can become as great as the master. And in everything that he said, you are the temple of God. Ye are God. Ye are the sons of God. And all through the Gospels, you will find that, and you will find love put forth. You will find not judgment. You will find not a constant haranguing about sin. He does mention it in a couple of places, but not constantly like St. Paul. St. Paul developed a whole new religion, which is almost entirely divorced from the teachings of the Christ, because the Christ put forth love in every act, in the supreme act of self-sacrifice. It was the greatest act of love that anybody could put forth. It's very interesting when you start to read the history of the Christian religion. That's true, I suppose, of almost every religion, because I see it in what has happened in the religion that I followed, and how after the Master's passing, the whole format has changed, the writings are changed, the books are changed, the lessons are changed, and you have a whole power trip by an organization of disciples that think that they know more than the Master, and it has ever been thus in every single case. I have one of the original, I don't have the book itself, but a copy of a book that John Wesley wrote. And it was fantastic in its presentation of the truth. He was the head of the Methodists, as you know. And one of our people was going through a spiritual experience several years ago and called the bishop because she couldn't find this book anyplace. She called the bishop and it is no longer in print. Imagine the original writings of the founder of such a tremendous organization. And so it is in every single case. But I swear, if I ever get anything written down and anybody changes it afterwards, I'm going to come back and haunt you. Because when somebody pays the price for knowing the truth, and that truth is taught and put forth, then it should be maintained. And I remember being in a bookstore, oh, this was way back in the early 60s, and I was quite upset about what had happened to my master's works and all that he had tried to put forth. And I asked for some original copies of his works, and they didn't have any, and I mentioned something about the changes. So the clerk in the store, who was rather an elderly woman, she said, oh, well, I wouldn't worry about it. That always happens. I became quite incensed. I said, well, this time I'm going to see to it that it doesn't. Well, I found out I couldn't do one God bless the thing about an organization, but I could do something about myself. And so not being able to do anything about getting the thing back where it was supposed to be, although I would have given my life to do it, actually. I fought with everything at my command, and I couldn't do that. I offered myself up as a sacrifice. And having wanted with everything, I prayed that God would, in some way, show me how I could help, how I could set things straight. Well, he listened to my prayers, but not the way I thought he would, which is usual. But anyway, what he did was to put me through everything that is in the Bible. He put me through the crucifixion. He made me go the way of the cross and the Christ and the way that my master taught. And so he came to show me the way, to give me the techniques to go the way. I went the way. And I came out with the truth. And so when you do what is necessary to become that truth, and nobody can copyright it. Nobody can take it away from you, and you are a free soul to spread that truth across the earth. So I got my answer, but I got it in a very different way. Still, I think I got it in a much greater way, because the organization still goes on. Many people are being helped, even though there's a watered-down version. They don't even know that. That's the pathetic part about it. They don't know, but they're not getting the truth. They think that this is the original, and it isn't. And only thus, those of us who were with the Master, and that is true of any great spiritual leader down through the ages, really knows the truth. Now, the Gospels have been handed down. They were uncovered centuries after, maybe some of them earlier. But it was not a hard and fast thing. And yet, look what has developed in the way of the books of the Bible. As I've told you before, there are 29 more books in the Catholic Bible than there are in the Protestant. Now, if the whole Bible is the Word of God, the absolute truth, then I'd like somebody to tell me who made the decision to take out the other 29 and why. If they were the truth of God and still are, as far as the Catholics are concerned, and they're the first ones that had all of it together, why is this? You start questioning these things that have been handed down to you by word of mouth and now given to you as gospel truth and the word of God himself when it has been a totally man-made thing, and it makes you think. I know this, that every word in the four gospels is true. Because God lifted me up and he put me through these things. And I know the truth behind the parables. And that I can testify to. But insofar as the rest of it that has been added, all the canons and the laws and this and that and the other thing, these are man-made. They are man-made for different reasons. Some to govern, some to control, some as a power trip, some to get money, some to further legislation, some to get numbers of people. And so I decided to change all that and give the truth as I had experienced it. Never to charge a dime for anything that I did, because I don't think that God can be bought and sold. And never, under any circumstances, to go out after anyone. If anyone gives me an opening and opens the door wide enough for me to put my foot in, I try to put my whole body in a hurry and sell them. Because I've got the greatest product in the world, which is God. I don't go out after anyone, and I don't try to hold anyone. You're free to come and to go as you please, because no coercion should be used with regard to any man's worship of God. It's each one's inalienable right to worship God as God within him directs. And because somebody at the other end of the world speaks about God in a different tongue, calls him by a different name, that doesn't mean that he isn't speaking about the same one Father God. And every great religion in the world has had a Father God. Everyone has had a Divine Mother. Everyone has had a Christ. Everyone has had a virgin birth. If you don't believe it, start studying it. And you will find that what I tell you is the truth. And yet we, as Christians, have been taught to believe that Christ was the first one, and he is the only begotten Son of God, as Paul said. Paul instigated his own belief, and he put it forth to a waiting world and established, in effect, a brand new religion. So I would say that there are definitely Christians, those who follow the teachings of the Christ, and there are Paulists, those who accept what Paul said about the Christ and then his own teachings. Ms. Wilmer?
Paul was evidently was the world's greatest proselyte in the world ever known.
He was what?
The world's greatest
proselytizer.
And he, that he was primarily into the spread of Christianity. That's why he made a lot of the changes that he made. Philosophy appealed to different people. I have a question. Do you feel that...
Watch it. Do I feel it what?
Well, two things. Do you feel Paul claims that everything is even down with came to He claimed that he was that spokesperson. And also, he claimed to have had a visionary experience on the road to Damascus, for which there were no witnesses. Other, for which obviously no one was imagined. Do you feel that he actually had this experience, visionary experience, and do you feel that when he called things down?
Well, someone said to me the other day that that everything that was in the scriptures today, that includes all of the Paulinian letters, was divinely inspired. Now, in so far as what Paul actually saw, what he actually experienced, I can tell you what I have been through. You accepted in faith. But until you yourself have had such an experience, you cannot say for sure whether or not that what I say is true. Now, Because of what I taught you for a long, long time, as I've said before, all you had was my word for it. But then Beth went into this tremendous experience. The whole congregation got involved. We've had other people who have gone through it since. And so you have seen outwardly and with your own eyes and been involved with people who are actually going through this. So now you know at least from the experience of others that there may be some foundation for truth in what I say. But until you yourself have taken the techniques which have been given to you, when you are willing to give up yourself totally, your whole human ego, and lay it at the feet of God and make yourself ready for this great experience and go through it, you cannot say for sure. So that is the beauty of what I teach, or what anyone teaches in that way. That if you teach the truth, if you give the method for attaining that truth, and the individual follows it, then they can prove for themselves whether or not it is right or wrong. Now, Saul was the one who was, he's one of the Pharisees, and he was going away from God, and he was talking against God. Then all of a sudden it is said that he had this vision on the road to Damascus, and the Christ came to him and asked him why he persecuted him. And from then on he was called Paul. Now Saul is the persecutor, and Paul means the little one, the new one on the path. You will find this in your Bible dictionary. So it's a question of whether or not this too is an allegory of every man, every soul's development on the way to God. Because in the beginning, in our human consciousness, we go away from God. We are engrossed in the things of the world, the things of the senses. Then finally something happens that turns our attention to God. And usually it's a need within ourselves. We have some terrible tragedy or something starts stirring within us and we feel the need to reach out for something that we never felt before, a lifting up of our spirit. And that's probably because up to that time, it's been necessary for us to go through the experiences that we have gone through and been put through. And this was a hangover from another incarnation. But then all of a sudden, having paid our price for this particular thing that we still had to pay out, and many come with very little to work out in this life in the human sense before they're lifted up. And so you say to yourself, why is it that this person is so young and they're not going through all of this? They don't seem to be having the experience, and yet they're tremendous people in God. Why is it? Could it not be that they had gone through the crucifixion in the last lifetime, and perhaps for some reason or other had not quite completed it, and they had only this little bit to go through, and then they were lifted up? There's a reason for everything, and the law of God is absolutely perfect in every single sense. For every action, there's an opposite and a real and an opposite reaction. So, that being so, when you have so ordered your life that you are willing to forget your little self, when your love for God becomes so great that you're willing to surrender yourself and everything you call your own, every person that you are attached to, and throw it into the ocean at the feet of God, then he will lift you up. And then he will put you through whatever is necessary. It isn't something that you do yourself. You bring yourself to the point. Every man does. He strives desperately when he once puts his feet seriously on the ladder of God realization, to get his God realization until he comes to that moment where he knows that of himself he can do nothing, that it is his Father who doeth the works. And at that moment, when he lays his head down in his arms on a table or wherever and said, Lord, I've done everything I know how to do. If you want me to have God realization, you've got to help me up. At that moment of total surrender, then God comes in, lifts you up, and he does the work for you. But it has to come to that point. And it even has to come to the point where you surrender your desire for God realization. And you are just open. Here am I, Lord, take me. Do with me as you will. If it be thy will that I realize my oneness with you in this incarnation, so be it. But if it be thy will that I do not, then I accept thy will. How many want to come to that point? Not very many. Everybody wants to be a saint. Everybody wants to be a Messiah somehow. Everybody wants to be a teacher, a healer, or whatnot. I remember reading a little cartoon not so long ago, and it told about a man who was being acclaimed by all the people, and he was denying it. He said, no, I am not the Messiah. I am not Elijah. I am not the Savior who was to come. You should not be looking at me. You should be looking for him. No, I am not the one. And it said it's really peculiar how important you become in the negative. Mm-hmm. I'm not this, I'm not that. And so people think, well, that one is tremendously humble. They have to be of God, and in spite of anything you can say, they worship them. Now, maybe they're for real. Sometimes they aren't. But through all of these negative statements, I am not this, I am not that, you should be worshiping him, then you make of yourself great, and you become important in the negative sense. Very, very interesting. And I read another little one that was equally interesting. There was a blind man once who had been healed by the Christ. He was shown sitting in the sand, and Joshua, the prophet, was with him. And he said, "Oh, look," he said, "this is the first time I've ever seen my toes." And he started counting them. And Joshua said, "Why, you foolish man," he said, "why are you wasting your time looking at your toes? Why do you not look at all the great universe around you? Look at the sky and the sun and the moon and the stars, and think of all the great creative stellar systems that the Lord has made. And look at the earth, consider the lilies of the field, how they grow." And all of a sudden the blind man who had been blind said, "I've now counted up to six." And Joshua said, "Miracles are sure wasted on some people." And isn't it the truth? Unless you see signs and miracles, you will not believe. Of course, in our present day, we have Satya Sai Baba in India, who is materializing things out of the air constantly, like diamonds. I saw a diamond that he materialized, and it was a huge rock. A real woman was wearing it on her hand. And there are watches that have been materialized. The only thing is, in a couple of instances, I understand that there was the name of a jeweler in Paris on a couple of items. And you wonder what powers they use to get them in their hands, you know? And I don't think that it's a right thing to have to use miracles. He said he does that to attract the people so that he can take them to God. But if he has the truth, why are the miracles necessary? Now, the second to the last time when I was in India, I've told you about this woman, Milan Ma, who was a tantric yogi and who had the power to materialize things out of the plane of universal ash, which is where all of the things that disintegrate on Earth go first. And so by the powers that she had gathered to herself through meditation and whatever she did in the way of techniques, she actually was able to materialize things right before your eyes. And she only had a simple cloth all around her body, no blouse. And of course I came somewhat as a doubting Thomas. And she knew what I was thinking, because all of a sudden she stripped down, bare naked to her waist, held out her arms, and she says, "Ah!" In other words, "No tricks, Ma." But before my eyes, she materialized a rose, or she materialized some other kind of flower. It had dew on it. And I had a bouquet of flowers to take back to my hotel room, and they lasted a full week, just the same as any flowers that you'd picked out of the garden. I saw her materialize sandesh, which is an Indian sweet. It's a little round ball with honey or sweet syrup in the center. I ate half of it, and David's mother ate the other half. She materialized the sandalwood, and such fragrance, incense was absolutely tremendous. And then branches of trees and roots, and then she would take sort of like a kitchen scissors or a garden scissor and chop up the root and give a piece to different people who had asked for healing. Each one came with a little note and the amount of money that she charged, and this was their prayer to her. And if they gave her more than what she was charged, she'd give them back the change. Then she'd go into this state of trance, and she had this sort of a saddle-like arrangement on the altar, which was covered with flowers, but it was like the hump that sits up there. And she'd take a flower from below, and she'd put it on there, and then she'd hold her hands down there. And if the flower dropped in her hand, then the devotee's prayer was going to be answered, but if it didn't, it wouldn't be. So one time, apparently, this person who was asking for the prayer to be answered was a good friend, and she wanted desperately for that person to have their prayer answered. So she kept holding the hand out, and she worshipped the mother Durga, which is the black goddess, and her form was on the altar, a statue of her. So she kept on, and finally she scowled and she scowled. She was quite a character. And finally she says, "Ma, ma," like this. And out of the air came this piece of sandish, this Indian sweet. And she looked at her and scowled. And that's what I had part of. That was her propitiation for not having the paragraph. It was really a tremendous thing. Then I told some of you about the fact that various people asked to be healed of the evil that was within them. And these people would bring a banana, and the banana was supposed to be absolutely whole, not perforated in any way. And they'd bring their own plate, their own knife and everything. So sometime during the ceremony, she'd go into a state of trance through all of this. She seemed to be able to act, but nevertheless, this was the way she was. And she would take up this knife, and she would slip the banana, say an incantation over it. And if they had gotten rid of the evil there, instead of the banana pulp, was absolutely venous blood right before your eyes. The banana was filled with the blood, but if they weren't healed of their sins, why, their whole banana would be in there. And then if it was in there, she'd take it up and she'd hand it to him like this, much to say, look what was in you, all this stuff, you know. It was fascinating. I couldn't believe my eyes. So I went back the second time. The second time, I got right by the railing where she was working, and so when she came to this part, I got my nose right over it. And that's what I saw. And we actually got a picture of a flower materializing in her hand. You can see it coming in on the photograph into her hand. So I couldn't doubt after that. This is something that I want to follow. But it was fascinating. I had hoped to see her again the last time, but there wasn't time. Anyway, those are the experiences that make life interesting. And we have so many things in this world today. So many people walking the earth. For instance, we're told that people from other planets are walking the earth here. They look like we do. They're sizing us up, and I guess they're going to find out which one of us are fit to take up in a basket when the earth disappears or something. I don't know. There's going to be a tremendous exodus from earth. And of course, when you go through these spiritual experiences, not everything that you get is all from the good side, you see. Some of it is hallucinatory. And I remember having one such hallucination where the earth was going about to be destroyed. And my husband and I were hustling all the people into the baskets. They were all going up to the planet Venus. And we couldn't go until the last person had been taken, and then we were going. And just as the earth was starting to crumble, I put the last person on, and I never did find out whether or not I got to go, and I've been frustrated ever since. Well, Beth, how about leading us in some chants for a while? Why don't I read this article, Papa Answers. Devotee, how to make the fullest use of the days given to us, Papa. Papa, the art of living can be practiced only when we turn our minds inward for some time at least, during the 24 hours of the day, and find that there is in us a truth that binds us all together in mutual fellowship and goodwill. Steve, would you like to tell me what heaven is?
Hell, and what is heaven, and why is heaven the answer?
No, I didn't ask you about hell, but heaven. I assume you don't know anything about hell.
Well, I guess heaven would be a state of consciousness in which we're a complete union with God.
You have to guess?
I would have to guess that, yes, I think so.
Is it a place?
Only if you consider a state of consciousness a place, or if you consider God a place.
Is he a place?
Pardon me?
Is he a place?
Not in the sense of heaven, I guess.
No? I thought he was all things.
He is, but not in the sense of heaven, I wouldn't think.
Isn't he everywhere equally present?
Yes, he is.
Well, isn't he in heaven?
Yes, he is.
That's where we are told we can find him, isn't it? And where did the Christ say heaven was?
In your own being.
That's right. So, what is your deduction from that?
That's where it's fine.
When are you going to start searching?
Right now.
So the next time I ask you, you won't have to say, I guess you will say, heaven is. Right?
Okay.
Okay. But then we have to transform earth, the earth of our own being, so that it's the same as it is in heaven. Let thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. And you notice that in the Lord's Prayer it doesn't say on earth, as so many people say. It says in earth. Just like it speaks of the blood of the cross and the death of the cross, so it speaks of in earth as it is in heaven. You know, it's a strange thing what the difference that one little tiny word makes. It makes all the difference in the meaning. All the difference in the world. And if you just, when you read the scriptures, if you will read with full concentration and actually realize what you're reading, mill it over in your mind, mull it over or whatever, and see what you come up with. You come up with some fantastic truths. And it's a strange thing that what you come up with differs from what you have been taught by word of mouth since you were a child in many instances. It's remarkable. And it's very, very enlightening. And you get a whole new concept of truth. And with all that you read, all that you're able to gather, you know that there's only one place to find the answer to the truth. And that is from God, who is the soul indwelling presence, right within you, right within you. He is your very self. And always this idea of separation comes in to lead us astray. We always have to go someplace. We have to go to somebody. We have to do something to find God. And all the time, He resides in our heart, on the altar of our heart and the throne of our consciousness, if we but knew it. And all you have to do is to close your eyes and go deep within your own soul, and you will find Him there in all of His wonder, His beauty, and His glory. And as I said this morning, if you will just lift your consciousness above all of your problems, above all of your difficulties, and put it on God alone. Put yourself in His hands. God in you is immutable. He's indestructible. He's eternal. He is infinite. God cannot die. He cannot be harmed. And if you know that with every single thing within you, you know that you are surrounding yourself with an aura of His light, of His love, of His power, that nothing can penetrate. I have given some of you a mantra, and it goes, there is a yellow, yellow, golden, golden, yellow, yellow, spiritual aura manifesting itself around my body. And you repeat that three times. There is a yellow, yellow, golden, golden, yellow, yellow, spiritual aura manifesting itself around my body. Visualize it. Feel that light emanating from your electrical body until it spreads and spreads and spreads. And it keeps out all of the dross, all that you would call evil from coming in. And yet because it is so pure, because it has such tremendous power in the fire of that light, it burns all the dross and keeps the evil from coming and yet let your good enter in. It's tremendous. Then it goes on. No evil or lower force can penetrate it to harm or influence me. No evil or lower force can penetrate it to harm or influence me. Father, I am under thy divine protection. If you can visualize that, if you can have faith in it with all of your heart, your mind, your soul, and your strength, there is nothing that can get at you. Nothing at all. Many times people have perhaps a little bit of difficulty in the way of an experience when they're trying to meditate. whether or not it be imaginary or real. Still, it is a problem that they have to deal with. So if you will say this mantra, when you first sit down to meditate, just clothe yourself in his garment of light, the light of the Christ, and feel his infinite presence surrounding you, permeating every part of your being. Then nothing can touch you whatsoever, nothing at all. And remember the greatest mantra of all, God, Christ, Guru. If you will say that with all the power of your being, calling upon God, Christ, and Guru, you will find that that is the most formidable weapon, the greatest protection that you could possibly use. I know because I have used it. And it has saved my life not once, but more than once. Even when I couldn't speak, when I had hands around my throat choking the life out of me, and I couldn't speak, still with every bit of power within me, I said that mentally, and the hands loosened just like that. I know it works. It has worked for me. And you know, the same Father God that is in this form is equally present in the forms of every single one of you. I don't have a monopoly on it, on him. No one does. If we would only turn our whole attention away from the things of the world, our attachment to the things of the senses, and really go inside, and with all of our hearts and minds and souls and strength, worship God, lay ourselves at his feet, and surrender ourselves to him totally. Here am I, Lord, take me, do with me as you will. You would find that your whole life would change. Because the more you think about it, God, the more you bring it into your life, into your manifestation. He is there fully, but you do not realize that because of this constant idea of separation. I and my Father are one. Repeat that over and over again with full consciousness, knowing that in truth that oneness exists, that nothing can ever separate you from the Lord, because he is that living spirit, that living intelligence, that living power, that living will, that living presence within yourself. And nothing can take that away. Nothing can kill it. Nothing can make it die. Nothing can harm it, because it is the perfection of the power and the glory of God. And when you make that supreme effort, and he takes you in his arms and lifts you up, you feel an everlasting bliss within yourself, a bliss that goes beyond all human description. You think that you have ecstasy when you have a physical union with someone. But actually, when you learn to control that life force and retain it within your own being, lift it up instead of dissipating it from your body, the power that you engender, the light that comes into your being, the bliss that fills your heart and spreads to every part of your body is absolutely indescribable. You go around sometimes as though you were drunk on liquor, and in truth you are drunk, but it is with the wine of the Spirit. And that inebriation doesn't give you a hangover the next day, believe me. It carries on and on and on. Sometimes it becomes so great that for the moment you have transcended even your body consciousness. You are lifted out of your body, so to speak. And then you hear the music of the spheres. You are taken to far distant places. You see tremendous shining beings. You are given truths that you never even dreamed of. Revelations unfold themselves before your eyes. You see the pattern of all creation right from the beginning of time up until the present moment. And sometimes you are given the vision of what will happen in the future. But if you can look at all of life as a witness and still be a participant in the greatest way for God alone, what a tremendous life that will be. You will indeed become a light on a hilltop to light the way for others. Because nobody is excluded from being called by God. Nobody is excluded by being chosen if they will only make the effort. It says in the scriptures that many are called, but few are chosen. And as I have told you before, the reason those ones are not chosen is because they have refused or failed to make sufficient effort. They haven't put God first. They have put themselves first. They have put all of their petty worries and trials and tribulations, their fears, their lacks, their wants, before God. And yet if they only knew it, if they would transcend that, if they would put those thoughts behind them and put their full attention upon God, He would dissolve all of those things, because that is His way. If we give ourselves to Him first, all the rest of the things follow after. And indeed, you have a new birth in Christ. A new birth. Instead of being the old man, the creature, so to speak, the victim, the slave of the five senses, you become the master, the manipulator of all of these things which come at you or are within you. And you stand glorified, able to use anything as you did before. But you are the master and not the slave. And you use it only at God's direction. And yet it doesn't even seem at that moment that there is a direction, because your oneness with Him is so total, so complete, that there is just a state of being, a constant outpouring of the divine within yourself, manifesting in all directions. You open your eyes or you close your eyes and you see nothing but the light of God everywhere, in every creature, in every circumstance, in every atom of space, in every form. All is God. And when that blessed moment comes to you, it is indescribable. It takes you beyond the human into the Spirit of God. Until all of a sudden you go beyond all duality and nothing but yourself exists, and you sit there singing your song of everlasting bliss. And who do you sing it to but to yourself? Because each and every one of us is a part of that one self, a spark of the divine that has come forth from the great fire of God's love, from the great light of His life. But for one purpose, to realize who and what we are in Him. That is the supreme attainment of life. There are many ways of attaining that state. But the simplest one is to give yourself to Him totally, to think only of Him, to repeat His holy name. When I was at Papa's ashram in India just recently, little Swami Mudrananda, whose name used to be Subaram, and he finally took the name, when he became a Swami, of Mudrananda. It means oneness with God through sweetness. And he was just as sweet and dear as he could be, full of fun. And he'd taken on quite a bit of weight. He was just a little fellow. And before, when I saw him, he was quite thin. And it seems that every time I would say something to him, Mother Krishnabai would also say the same thing to him. And he came in to me one day and he said, "Mother, I don't know what I am or what I'm going to do." He said, "I feel like a piece of jelly between two slices of bread." He said, "I go to Mother and she tells me the same thing as you do, and I come to you and you tell me the same thing as she does." Anyway, he has left the ashram for the greater part of the time, and he wanders all over India now, singing the name of God. And he has his tablas, he has his harmonium, and the light in this man's face is absolutely beautiful. He's a joy to be around. He's full of laughter. He's full of fun. And yet you see him singing to God as he plays the harmonium with his eyes closed, and he's pouring every part of his being into what he's doing. And he's taken Papa's poems and he has set them to music. And he's taught all of the members of the ashram how to sing also. And so they all sing together in unison. And it really is delightful. Last time David Ranney and I were there, there were 30 people that had come in from Mururoi. And these people were well-versed in chanting together. And so they put on a program for us, all singing in different chords and tones. And it was indeed beautiful and moving. It's tremendous to be in a place where the name of God is on the lips or comes from the pen of every person in the ashram 24 hours a day, because they have Ram Nam, as they call it, going all day long, all night long. whenever they want any prayers answered at all. The mother sends out word all over India and through the magazine, and so they start in sending in their books where the Om Shri Ram J Ram J J Ram chant is written, and they count the number of times the chant has been written. And sometimes there are crores and crores and crores, and because the power of prayer is so great, then whatever is prayed for comes to pass. That's how Papa was kept in the body for years and years, perhaps beyond his time, because every time his body would be ailing, Mother would send word out all over India, and everybody in India would pray for him, even as you do for God in this form. And believe me, prayer helps. Actually, I have felt it when you are praying for my health. I have felt the change come within myself. I have felt an upliftment, a state of bliss. And the next morning I got a feeling much better, much stronger than I had before. You see, when you go all the way to God, you become a ransom for the many who follow with you. And you pack a part of their load, whatever it may be. Many people say, how come that she's sick or he's sick when they're supposed to be God realized? Why is their body not perfect? Your perfection is in the spirit, because that is where your specialty is. The body follows after in whatever way it can. And like St. Francis, you see, this is my brother donkey. It does whatever I ask it to do. And I push it to the very limit. And I did that just very recently, because when I left here for Victoria on Tuesday, it could hardly move. I had abused it. I had used it up to the fullest possible capacity of which it was capable. And it could hardly wiggle. But it managed to get on a plane and get off the plane with help and get some rest. Now it's back full swing again, ready. But I push my body for God. I come before you even sometimes when I feel that I'm hardly able to crawl, because my body is my servant. It has to obey me. It has to do what I tell it to. And many of you know that that's true, because you have seen me so very ill that I could hardly stand on my feet, and yet I come up here and nobody knows it who doesn't know about it. Because I turn myself over to God, my eyes go half-lidded as they are now, and he takes me over and he uses me, and although I sound like a frog croaking sometimes to start with, and I lose my voice and I cough and do this and that, the first thing I know, the voice gets stronger and more powerful and more powerful and more powerful, until he's just coming out with all the power that he has in this form to speak the truth which he wants you to hear. Believe me when I say that I of myself do nothing, I mean it. Every now and then I make the statement, well, that was a real good sermon, wasn't it? It might sound like the highest form or the worst form of egotism, but I don't mean it like that at all, because I'm not taking the credit for it. I'm giving it to him, that indwelling presence within this form, because he alone does all things through me and for me. When I am in this state, I don't exist as a separate creature. I am lifted up. I am absorbed by him. I am used by him. And it is my will to do only the will of God, because long ago I surrendered myself to him at the feet of my master. I gave my life to him, and I told him he could use it in whatever way he will. And he took it, and he used it, and he put me through the crucifixion, and he taught me, and he made me suffer, and he gave me enlightenment, and he lifted me up, and he gave me bliss, and he made me whatever I am. As indeed he makes each and every one of us. Because we are constantly in the position of having God flow through us. Why? Because we are made in his image and his likeness. And yet some of the things that we do to this temple, that is his, the temple of the living God, are indescribably awful. We should purify our beings. We should keep our consciousness holy, our body clean. We should not put into it the things that deteriorate the body, that keep us from realizing how great and wonderful is that life within us, that intelligence, that wisdom, that power, that glory. It isn't the glory of the little self, but it is the little self lifted up into a place of glory where nothing but the Christ consciousness resides, where that one has gone all the way, gone beyond the pairs of opposites, and has been in eternity and come back to live an enlightened life and to inspire through their example the lives of other people, to teach them the truth through their own knowledge and experience of truth. It isn't a thing of acceptance of the word of somebody who has not gone that way, but it is an acceptance of one who really knows, one whom no one, nothing could dissuade from their knowledge of the truth, because they have paid the price in full measure. What does that price mean? It means to die to your little self, to give up all that you call your own, to stop your egotistical ways, your arrogance, your fighting constantly against God, Christ, and Guru, and to surrender with everything you have, and to try to put into practice in your life what the Guru comes to teach you. Think of the price they have paid for your sake in order to be able to do this. And then dare, if you will, to say it's all right for you to do these other things, to go your own way and to continue doing the things that you know very well you shouldn't be doing. It is totally wrong. And who pays the price? Who is punished? No one but you. No one but you. You, through the use of your own free will, through the choices that you make, either reward or punish yourself. You take yourself into your good, into God, or you keep yourself from going. And that is the difference between heaven and hell. Because heaven is a place of high upliftment. It is a place of light, of ecstasy, of bliss, of total well-being, of a realization of your oneness with God. And hell, or Hades, is a place of the dead, or those who choose to remain in darkness and ignorance, dead to the things of the spirit. It doesn't mean just the physical death, but it means the death of the soul. You're dead to all that is good and wonderful and beautiful in life. And the pity of it is that so many people don't care enough to make the effort. Even those that know don't make the effort. They continue on in their ways, going their own egotistical ways, making trouble for themselves and everybody else, making it tough every inch of the way, fighting. Why? To preserve that which in truth we are told does not even exist. It is pure delusion, because there is only one self in this world. And that supreme self is the great I am that I am, God himself, by whatever name you want to call him. The Christ consciousness, the only begotten Son of God, is that which came forth from God the Spirit, the Father. He manifested as the Father. He manifested as the mother, or God as nature. And he projected himself into the womb of nature, his eternal spirit, and took on a form of flesh and dwelt among us. That's why each and every one of us are made in his image and in his likeness. There's none other but he in this whole wide world. Every single thing is of God. But man in his delusive state fails to accept the idea of the Godhead and the fact that he is living in the temple of God, that it is God within him who is his real self. And he goes on a path of total self-destruction. How terrible that is to see a human soul that could go all the way to God, that could be filled with light, that could be a tremendous instrument for God to use to lift humanity, to make the world a better place to live in, and to see it, that whole life wasted. In this coming new year, let us awaken ourselves, our souls, our minds, our full consciousness to divinity, open ourselves to it, and make every single effort that is possible to realize our oneness with him. And I promise you, with every bit of power at my command, that if you will make the total effort, God will bless you with the total realization of your oneness with him. and you will know that every word that I have ever said to you bears the truth in all of its beauty, its wonder, and its glory. No matter what you're asked to go through, it is such a small price to pay for the glory that comes afterward, for the power that you feel, filling every part of your being, for the revelations that are given you, the consciousness that is engendered within you, the bliss of His everlasting grace, His everlasting presence. All of this you will have. That is a promise, but you must do your part. Open yourselves to it. Let go of the things that are not of God, so to speak. This form of delusion, these things which keep you from realizing who and what you are, let go of them once and for all in one fell swoop. I did that once, and I have never, from that moment to this, regretted it. But rather, I thank God every day of my life that first He gave me the inspiration and then the will to do it. That He guided me, He directed me, and He protected me from myself. So that never once, even though that vow that I took was made only to Him, with no human being knowing it, even my own guru, I have never to this day broken that once, and it's been many, many, many years. Because I had a choice to make. I had a choice to make as to whether or not I wanted to go all the way to God, or whether I wanted to go the way of the world. And believe me, that in my case was a real choice. But I made it. And when I made that choice, I did it for life. I didn't fool around with it and say, I'll try it for a while and see if it works. I didn't say, I'll do it for an hour, a day, a week, a month, or a year. I said, I will do it forever, for this whole lifetime and beyond. And I meant it with everything I knew. And God knew that. And so therefore, whatever I am today, it is a result of giving myself totally to Him, of giving up the things of the senses, the desires of the flesh, until I became master of them. This doesn't mean that you can't use the things of the senses, but that you are no longer bound by them, you are not a slave to them, but you use them as a part of what God directs you to do on this earth. Let us make a New Year's resolution. All of us hold the thought uppermost in our mind of the chief goal we want to use, to reach, I should say. And that is the realization of our oneness with God. Let us make a pact with Him that during this year we will make every effort to turn our lives over to Him, to let Him use us as we will, to give our complete love, our complete dedication, our complete devotion to Him alone. And in giving it to Him, you give it to God in every man. None is left out, because where is He not? We are all His children, all brothers and sisters, all with the one immutable, transcendent, glorious Father God, the Lord of the universe. Let's go on to this question and answer thing here. Devotee, how to concentrate on the sweetness of Ram Nam? Papa, sit for a short while and with all love and devotion take His name. You will find that the name will grant you, for the moment at least, real peace and bliss. You know when you were singing God's name in chorus what peace and joy you felt inwardly. You can take God's name everywhere and anywhere, while walking, sitting, traveling, on all occasions and at all times. If you have got any adoration for any form of God, let that form dwell in your heart, and let the name chanted by your tongue constantly ring in your ears. In this way you will find there will be no room for any other thought to come and disturb you. You will be doing all things in a calm, serene, and cheerful spirit, and ultimately you will find that you are merged in God, and that you are doing everything by His will, His power, and His inspiration. Devotee, what pleases God most? It pleases Him most when we sing about Him with all love and devotion. The sound of God's name is very sweet. When we sing with all love, we find that our heart is filled with inexpressible joy and peace, and therefore before our eyes stands the image of the divine. In this stage, we are lifted to a height where we enjoy supreme ecstasy. You know the famous and world-renowned Devarishi Narada. He was singing God's name continuously and feeling himself to be ever in Vaikuntha before Lord Vishnu. Prahlada was singing the name of Narayana and was feeling his presence always with him. He had the vision of Vishnu. So also you will find so many devotees like Tyagaraja, Tukaram, Ekanath, John Dave, Tosadas, Kabir, Guru Nanak, the Allware Saints, etc. All of them had Saguna Upasana and were singing in beautiful poetic language and enthralling music the glories of the divine, and were able to capture the heart of God and make Him grant them His darshan. God has gifted us with the musical talent. We must use it only for singing His glory and praising Him. God says, I am not available easily to yoga, tapas winds, or yanis, but I dance before those devotees of mine who sing of my glories with all love and devotion. Devotee, how does one cultivate humility? Papa, a man who is humble has the highest virtue. A man who is proud has no virtue at all. When it rains, water does not collect on top of the hill, but in the low valleys. So virtues are not found in the person who is proud, but in the humble. Humility is the greatest virtue. Humble people are very dear to God. We can cultivate humility by contacting saints. Saints are free from pride, free from ego sense, and free from the thought that they are something big. They are humble, pure, and childlike. Our nature develops according to the company we keep. If we constantly have a company of saints, our nature becomes like that of a saint. Therefore, we learn how true humility comes to us when we constantly think of the Lord of the universe. In His presence, we are nothing. When we forget Him, our ego asserts itself and pride comes in. When we remember His glory, His greatness, omnipotence, and omnipresence, then we feel ourselves very little. So let us constantly remember God and think of His infinite nature, His all-powerful existence. Devotee, many desires worry us day and night. What should we do in each circumstance? In this condition, there is only one refuge, and that is God. And the easiest path to approach Him is the path of devotion. Devotion, or bhakti, is the intense longing for God above everything else. In that spirit, we should remember Him and take His holy name. His name is the boat that takes us across the sea of life. This has been declared to us by all great sages and saints. We can keep the name on our tongue and our heart in tune with God all the time. Desires are like so many scorpions stinging the mind. They sting us constantly, and we become most miserable. All great saints like Tukaram, Ekanath, John Dev, Namdev, Kabir, and many others have told us with one voice that God's name is the most simple way to remember God. When our mind is completely absorbed in Him, no desires will harass us. Devotee, how can we create faith or love for God in those who have no love or faith? Papa, by ourselves loving God and living a real life. By loving God, we love our fellow beings. If we say we love God and do not love our fellow beings, others will ask us, is this love for God? If it is so, we do not want to love God at all. So if you want to create love and faith in others, you must set an example to them by your living the right life. Devotee, what role do saints play in hastening the devotee's progress on the spiritual path? Papa, saints have got three ways of awakening the soul and creating in it a longing for God. By giving a foretaste of the joy of union with God, these are, first, by sight. When the saint's eyes fall upon you, your heart is changed, becomes fertile, and is charged with emotion, joy, and peace. Second, by thought. If he remembers you, that does the trick. Third, by touch. If he touches you, the thing is done. You go to him and ask him to bless you. He puts his hand on you and imparts a current, and you are changed. When Ram Dass went to see Ramana Maharshi, he imparted to him his grace through his eyes. He gazed at Ram Dass intently for a few minutes, and Ram Dass' body thrilled with a strange ecstasy. Devotee, Papa, why is it that people move about in constant fear of a world war and conflagration? Papa, the fear of war is prevalent everywhere. The atmosphere is almost surcharged with a feeling of insecurity and a dread of a great catastrophe. The fear is there because we have lost faith in God. If we believe in God, who is ruling over us and protecting us, and if we pray to him with a singleness of heart, his power will descend on the world and dispel the clouds of war that are hanging over us. The peace that we crave for in this world, in its present state of distraction, discord, and strife, can be got only if we go within ourselves and find the source of our being, God. In the light of this experience, we can disseminate peace and produce a peace atmosphere so that the world may be free from discord and strife. Devotee, how to make peace lasting on this earth? Papa, world peace should be based upon the unification of all members of the human race, without distinction of creed, nationality, or race. As such, it is the fitness of things that we should feel one. It is in the fitness of things that we should feel one with each other in every respect as belonging to one human family, one world family. The closer we come together on this basis, better it is for the world condition. The sure way in which this can be brought about is to know that our inner basis is God, who is our Father and Mother. If we look upon him as such, then in the light of our spiritual kinship, we can always live in peace. When we do so, we create an atmosphere of harmony and goodwill in the world, which will help in removing all discord and strife and scatter the war clouds hanging over us. Devotee, is renunciation necessary to attain the final state of realization? Papa, you have to renounce attachment for the world, but not the world. Nobody can renounce the world. Even if a man goes to the forest, the world is with him. Once a man who could not find God anywhere in the world went to the forest to realize God there. He spent many years in the forest undergoing strict discipline and severe austerities. Finally, God gave him his vision in the form of the world. Then this man realized that God was in the world, and there was no need for him to have gone to the forest. He went back to the world and lived there happily, seeing the whole world as God. Devotee, should we seek the Guru, or does he come to us automatically? Papa, how do you realize God? You crave for him and long for somebody to lead you from darkness to light, so that you may remember God and realize him. With this keen aspiration, you pray to God for guidance. When this cry comes from the innermost core of your heart, the Guru comes to you, or you happen to go to the Guru. There must be hunger in your heart for somebody to guide you. God himself comes in the form of the Guru to liberate you. It is even said that God cannot grant moksha or liberation, but only the Guru can do so. To give moksha is the right of the Guru. God can give you material wealth and prosperity, but not liberation. Devotee, how to find a Guru? Papa, that is a very important question. When a man is eagerly aspiring to have a Guru, the Guru will either come to him or he will be taken to the Guru by the divine within himself. It is in this way that Ram Dass was led by God for the darshan of Ramana Maharshi, who was in Tiruvannamalai, though Ram Dass was in Mangalore, which is far away from Tiruvannamalai. Why is divine grace available only to a few? Papa, all people do not want it. Devotee, in this world where there is so much of deceit, how can we get a guru? Papa, we need not mind the world. Let us mind ourselves. If we sincerely wish to have a guru, we will get his contact and be saved. Devotee, what is the sign of those who are progressing on the spiritual path? Papa, they will learn to love everybody. They will have a soft heart. They will feel for those in distress and try their best to relieve such suffering. Fellow feeling, love for all, compassion, tolerance, and forbearance are some of the qualities which a devotee develops if he is really on the path of God. Devotee, is everybody's life predestined? Papa, God's ways are mysterious, and we cannot understand what God is going to do the next moment. We should surrender ourselves to him and never worry how he has planned our life. Otherwise, we are liable to speculate the wrong way and thereby hinder our own progress. Let him do what he thinks best for us. We should be happy in whatever situation he places us. Devotee, was there any special reason for the change in your life in 1922? Papa, the only reason was that God's grace came to him. Everything happens by his grace, and if we know this, we shall not have to search out for reasons for things that happen. Devotee, according to the Gita, God is the doer. He is the master of the universe. People have tried to change their lives because some astrologers, however, forecast that their life was going to be, what their life is going to be, and these people were determined to change its course. Then how is it that God has planned everybody's life? Papa, perhaps God had planned it that way for them. Let us not try to understand how he does it. Ours is only to follow the plan he has chalked out for us. Let us not be caught by the changing time. Tomorrow would not be seen by anybody. Yesterday nobody saw. So these time factors are false. Let us try to transcend time and live in eternity. Because all these problems are related to time, let us not bother about them. Devotee, is God a personality? Papa, for Ramdas, the personality of God is the person who has realized God. God is personal and impersonal. The impersonal truth has revealed or expressed itself as personal, like Buddha, who is the personification of the reality. He is a person worthy of worship because he is the personal expression of the impersonal. The Supreme Spirit is manifest in him. So we worship Buddha, keeping him before us as an ideal. So also Christ. The Father he speaks of is the impersonal, and the Son is the personal aspect of the impersonal. Christ says, I and my Father are one. That shows clearly that he is the embodiment or expression of that Spirit whom he calls Father. Buddha is the personal representation of the impersonal nirvana, bodhisattva. Devotee, in what form does God reveal himself to the realized soul? Papa, in the form in which he is worshipped, God is formless, but he is in every form.